The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, these days I love to catch Uber. Uber is so convenient. You just push a button, bang, a car turns up. The drivers are friendly, the cars are clean. But there's one problem with Uber. At the end of the ride, the driver will give you a rating. And if you want to maintain a 5-star rating, it helps if you sit in the front seat and make conversation with the driver. And so I ask the same questions that the driver's been asked by every single passenger before. How long have you been doing Uber? What did you do before? Do you like Uber? And then they will ask you a question, and it's always the same question. What do you do for work? And I dread this moment because I have to say, I'm in professional Christian ministry, and I tell people about Jesus from the Bible, and it's suddenly quiet and awkward because no one wants to talk about religion, and no one wants to meet a religious person, and no one wants to meet a person in professional Christian ministry. Because when we think religion, we think of people who are intolerant, judgmental, and hypocrites. Have you ever wondered what Jesus would think of a religious person? If you've been coming, you know I've been using this picture. I got it off the internet because I think if Jesus was around today, this is what he would look like. He'll be a short, tanned, nondescript, Middle Eastern male walking around the countryside of Palestine speaking Aramaic. And today we're looking at Jesus in the Bible. And part of the premise has been Christianity has been exploding all over the world. Millions of people in Africa, Asia, and South America are choosing to love, worship, and trust Jesus. So what are they seeing in Jesus that we in the West have been missing? So it's time that we in the West forget about the Jesus we think we know, the Jesus we've heard about, the Jesus we've grown up with, and let's rediscover the Jesus in the Bible. So that's a series I've been doing, and today the topic is, did you know Jesus loathed religious haters and fakers? This talk will be about 20 minutes, and then there'll be question and answer time afterwards, and there'll be three parts to the talk. In the first part, Jesus in the Bible. Middle part, well, we're going to see mistakes that people can make about Jesus. And in the final part of the talk, well, how would Jesus want us to respond to him? So let's begin with the first part of the talk, Jesus in the Bible. What things did Jesus hate in the Bible? Well, what things do we hate? I'll tell you what I hate. I live in a street and it's a cul-de-sac, and at night, young people, it's always young people, they come in their cars and they eat McDonald's, and then they leave the McDonald's wrapper in my street. That makes my blood boil. I hate it when people talk too loudly on their mobile phones on a train. So you're going to see the adrenaline levels in you people rising right now too. And maybe that's something that really gets you angry. And it's the man spread. We all hate that guy on the train. And it's an official thing. It's in the English dictionary now, the man spread. And I think Jesus would have hated those things as well. McDonald's wrappers, mobile phone talkers, and the man spread. But in the Bible, it also says this. This is what Jesus really disliked. Luke 19, when Jesus entered the temple courts, he began to drive out those who were selling, and Jesus said to them, "My house will be a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of robbers." He goes into a temple and chases everyone out saying, "You have become robbers." In another part of the Bible, Matthew 23, he says this about religious leaders. "You appear as righteous, but on the inside, you're full of hypocrisy and wickedness." And then today in our Bible reading, we come to a famous story in Luke 18, the story of the Pharisee and the tax collector. Jesus says in this story, two men go to the temple to pray. One man is a Pharisee, an upright religious leader. And his prayer in contemporary terms would be, "Dear God, I thank you I'm not like other people. I don't lie, I don't cheat, I declare all my income, I have never been unfaithful to my wife, I'm generous to charity. I give to both sorts of charities, the tax deductible and the non-tax deductible sort. And I go twice on Sundays to church, the traditional and the contemporary service. It's an amazing prayer. I wish I could pray the same prayer. It's an amazing prayer. And then we have this guy, a tax collector. And I reckon today I've picked, what's his name?
Aaron Paul, Jesse
on Breaking Bad, a meth dealer. And you think, you know, this guy, and he prays, he looks down, doesn't even look up, and he just beats his chest. He says, "Dear God, have mercy on me, a sinner." And Jesus says, this man, not the other man, this man goes home right with God. And you think, Jesus, are you sure you got that ending right? And Jesus says, yep, this man, not this man, this man went home right with God. Wow. That is Jesus in the Bible. So how do we explain this story and also how Jesus wants us to respond to him? So let's come to the middle part of the talk now. What did this guy get wrong? What were his mistakes and what could be our mistakes? And I suggest in the Bible it hints he does three mistakes. The first mistake, it says this, right at the start it says this, to those who are confident of their righteousness. That's his first mistake. He is confident of his own righteousness. And we can all do things like that. For a while ago, I used to run a lot of marathons and half marathons. So I used to do a lot of training and I go to these events and run in these marathons. And in my mind, if I shut my eyes, this is what I thought I looked like. I thought I was flying because that's how it felt. But on the races, they have cameras that pick you up and they take pictures of you and they're hoping you will love your own picture so much you will pay money to buy your picture. I didn't buy any of them because this is what I look like. They found me this slow old guy and I thought, how come my feet are always on the ground in these photos? And I suddenly realized, I am shuffling. So in my mind, I had an overinflated view of myself. I thought I was way better than I thought I was. And apparently we all do. This is Jonathan Haidt. He's a Jewish atheist psychologist. And he's written this book, The Happiness Hypothesis. He says we all have an overinflated view of how good we are. He says every driver, if you survey in this room, all of us would say, I am an above average driver. All of us would say that. And yet, by definition, we can't all be above average. Half of us have to be below average. And at that point, you think, yeah, that's the person next to me. But I am above average. We all rate ourselves as above average. Jonathan Haidt says we all think we're more generous than we are. At the end of the year, the financial year, if we guess how much we've given to charity, apparently it's a lot more than we actually have given. They surveyed college professors in the USA. Almost every professor thought they were above average and exceptional as a professor. Then they collated the college students, and almost everyone said one day they would grow up to be an exceptional leader. And then they surveyed married couples, and they asked the wife, as a percentage, how much of the housework do you do at home? And they asked the husband, as a percentage, how much of the housework do you think you do? And they added the two figures together. It came to 120%. So each person thinks they're doing more of the housework than they actually are. And they think the other person is doing less of the housework than they actually are. So that's a person's first mistake. And maybe religion has a way of doing that. Religion helps us think, hey, because I'm being religious, I am better than who I am. And this is Jesus' warning to us religious people. Matthew 7. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye. And Jesus says that's our first mistake. Religion somehow can give us an overinflated view of how good we are and how bad everyone is. And that's the second mistake then. That the religious person makes, he looks down on everyone else. And it says that in the verse. Jesus told this to those who were confident of their righteousness and they looked down on everyone else. Have you ever wondered how tall you really are? Now, I know I'm not that tall, but I didn't think I was that short. But then I remember in my first year of medicine, they gave us a statistical sheet of the height of, you know, most people in the world. And based on that, I worked out statistically, I was like one or two standard deviations off the norm. I was an outlier in how short I was. Like, I'm one of the shortest people on the planet. And I didn't believe this, but just this year I went to Melbourne and I caught up with a friend of mine called Sam. So there are two Sams. So that's Sam on the left and that's me on the right. And people posted this on Facebook. And I thought, there's got to be a mistake. They photoshopped that. There's no way I really am that short. I thought, wow. But that's why I love going to Hong Kong. Because when I go to Hong Kong, I go, whoa, look how short everyone is. And suddenly I feel like I'm really, really tall. And so if you have an Asian friend that's always going to Hong Kong, now you know why they're going to Hong Kong. Just for one week in the year, they just want to feel like a tall person. See, it's good, it's nice to look down on other people. And religion helps us look down on other people. I go to church. Why can't everyone else go to church? I read my Bible. Why can't everyone else read their Bible? I pray. Why can't everyone else pray? But it's not just religion that does it. We all do it, whether we're religious or not religious. We all look down on people. So when we drive our hybrid economical car, we look down on the person with SUV who parks next to us. When we have our green eco shopping bags, we look down at the person who brought plastic shopping bags. On Earth Day, when we turn our lights off, we look down on our neighbour who left their lights on. And when we stand up for the pregnant lady on the bus, we feel good about ourselves and we look down on those who did not stand up. And when we see people being intolerant to people of different faiths, cultures and religions, we feel good that we are so much more tolerant, progressive and advanced. And when we put out the perfect family Christmas newsletter, we look down on those who don't have the perfect family like we do. And maybe we all do, not just the religious people, but we all look down on other people. So that's the second mistake the person made. What's the third mistake the person made? And I think it's this, it's subtle. It's not said there in words, but it's subtle. The religious person thought somehow he was performing for God, as if by performing, he could win God's favor. Now, when we went through primary school, there was always that kid in the class who would stick up their hand and say, "Miss, I finished my work. Can you give me more work?" Well, I was that kid. I was that kid who would say, "Miss, I finished. Give us more work." Or, "Miss, you forgot to give us homework." Why would I do that? Well, I think deep down, it's not like I wanted more homework, I wanted more work, but somehow you're getting the attention of the teacher. You're performing, and somehow you're thinking this will win her favour. But the mistake with that is now you're becoming a performing puppy dog, and you're actually disrespecting the relationship. It'll be like me saying to my wife, "I've unstacked the dishwasher!" And she just rolls her eyes when I say that. One, because, well, that's what you're meant to do. But two, as if somehow I'm going to win her favour by performing these amazing acts of housework. So they're the mistakes that religion can make us do. Make us think we're better than what we are, look down on other people and think somehow we're performing and winning God's favour. So how should we respond? That's our third and final part of the talk. How does Jesus want us to respond? What does this guy get right? Well, he does at least two things right. The first thing he does is this. Notice in his prayer he says, "Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner." That's the first thing Jesus wants us to do. Just to admit, you know what? I'm not okay. Have mercy on me. When I came back from America like 10 or 15 years ago, I bought myself a $300 car. And I only had a problem, rust. It had rust everywhere, but it was only $300. And to get it through Rego, all I did was I painted over the rust. And I got it through Rego. But only a month later, the rust comes up again. And then in a year's time, I just paint over it and I get rid of the rust. And then the rust comes back. And after I thought, no, this is ridiculous. This car is junk. My wife deserves better than this. In fact, it was always broken down as sitting on our front lawn. My wife called it the garden gnome, because that's what it was doing, just sitting on our garden. And I thought, my wife deserves better than this. And I towed away as junk. And at some stage, we got to realize, you know what? I've got a problem worse than rust in my heart. And the Bible calls it sin. I fall short of who I need to be. I fall short of who my family needs me to be. And I fall short of who God wants me to be. My wife deserves better. My friends and family deserve better. And God deserves better. There's shame, there's dishonor, there's disrespect in my heart. And I can't keep painting over it with respectful Christmas family photos. I have a problem. And this is the first thing that Jesus wants us to do. Just like the tax collector, come to that moment where we say to God, you know what? I'm not okay. Have mercy on me, a sinner. I have shame. But the second thing that the person does is this. And it's a hint. It comes in verse 14. And Jesus says, I tell you that this man, rather than the other, he went home justified before God. That's the hint from Jesus. He went home justified before God. Well, how is this a hint? Now, I could be treading on very, very unstable, dangerous territory here because I grew up speaking Chinese, but I've forgotten Chinese. It was my mother tongue. I used to dream in Chinese, count in Chinese. I lost it around about the age of 16 or 18. So you can lose your mother tongue. But I do know this about Chinese. Well, I still remember these words in Chinese. Ha gao, very important. And bae zao. So if you go to any Chinese restaurant, you're going to go, ha gao, prawn dumplings, bae zao, beer. But I do know this about Chinese. Chinese is very unusual. It's very different from the English language in that there are no plurals. So you can go one dumpling, two dumpling, three dumpling in Chinese. You don't have to go two dumplings, three dumplings. So I've got that right, have I? So far. Okay. Also, there are no gender pronouns. It's funny how all the debate about gender pronouns in English, because in Chinese there's only one pronoun and it covers all the genders. It's a robust, hard-working pronoun. So it's almost like you can say, you don't have to say he ate the dumpling or she ate the dumpling. There's just a word for he or she and it covers he or she. I've got that bit right, haven't I? Okay, I'm scanning. And from my understanding, and I could be wrong, but you just go bear with me, I think there's no passive verb in Chinese. So in English, you could say, he ate the dumpling, or the dumpling was eaten, passive. But in Chinese, I don't know how to say the dumpling was eaten. You'd have to say, he ate the dumpling. You have to put it back in the active voice. And so there's no passive voice, and a Chinese person had to translate verse 14, they would have to say, I tell you that this man, rather than the other one, God justified him. In other words, we can't justify ourselves in the active. We have to let God be the active partner, and God justifies us. We have to let God do the justifying work. And that's what this guy does, right? He comes to this moment where he says, you know what? I'm not good enough, but I trust that Jesus is good enough. You know what? I'm not the person I need to be, but I trust that Jesus is the person I need to be. And you know what? I can't justify myself. I can't make myself right with God, but Jesus justifies me, and Jesus makes me right with God. And that's what this guy gets right. He doesn't just humble himself and say, have mercy on me, a sinner, but he trusts that Jesus is the one that will get him right. It's his performance that earns God's favor, not our performance. So in our talk today, we've looked at this. What did Jesus think about religious people? Well, there was a type of religion he disliked. It was a type of religion where we make three mistakes. Religion makes us think we're better than we are. It makes us look down on other people. And it makes us think that somehow our performance is making us earn God's favor. When instead the religion that Jesus wants is this, where we humble ourselves and say, you know what, I fall short of who I need to be, but secondly, I trust that Jesus will make me the person I need to be. I'm at a stage of life now when I go to weddings, two things happen. One, I notice I'm a friend of the parents now and not the couple getting married. I thought, whoa, when did this happen? And secondly, when it comes time to dancing and they open up the dance floor, where those boring people go home? We don't dance when they start the dance music. But part of that is because my wife says to me before the wedding, you're not dancing. I'm not letting you dance. And on the one hand, I think, oh, just stab my heart. It's very humbling to hear your wife won't dance with you. But at the same time, it's very liberating to know she didn't love me for my dancing, which is quite a relief. And Jesus wants us to move that same moment where we have the self-awareness to know, you know what? I'm not the person I need to be. And that's very humbling. But you know what? It's very liberating because God loves me just the way I am, regardless. And now I put my trust in Jesus, and Jesus will make me the person I need to be. Oh, you mean because for us it's so culturally inappropriate to be like that. We're not in danger of that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
What might we be in danger of doing? I think even if we don't outwardly brag, inwardly, I think we're bragging. So we'll find our culturally appropriate way of doing it. But it's more an attitude of the heart. Somehow in the heart, you think, you know what, I am okay. And that shows with that Jonathan Haidt analysis, where that with it, statistically, everyone thinks they're better than they are. Like statistically, we overestimate how much we give to charity, how much housework we do. So somehow in our heart, where we're doing this, whether we find a culturally appropriate outlet or not. But we all do it with Facebook and Instagram and social media, don't we? Like we don't even just put a photo out there, but we put it through filters. And, you know, you take 100 family photos and, you know, pick the one where we're all smiling and our eyes are all open. So I love getting the family photos. And I always think, I wonder how long it took them to get that one shot. And so we're all putting a fake version of ourselves out there, even with a family photo.
Okay, so even if we're not saying, look at me, how amazing I am, the attitude of, yeah, but I'm still better than the average and I'm good enough is actually making the same mistake.
Yeah, and I think it shows when we drive. I think when we honk the driver that cuts us off, where at that moment we think, I would never do that. And that's the attitude. And just the way we, in our car, in the privacy of a tinted window and then anonymity, the real us comes out. And we all judge other drivers as way inferior or way more dangerous than us. They're either slower, faster, or more dangerous or inferior than what we would be. It's what we do when we drive past a person who can't reverse park and we want to just see their face, like, how could you not get in that spot? So we all do it.
Any other questions?
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.